Let's hope you got enough beauty rest. Come on, I'm busting you out.
Thanks. I owe you.
Are you done yet?
Cover your ears. I can't go with you listening.
Asami!
Ah! A little privacy, please!
Are you all right?
I'm fine. It's so good to see you.
Hate to break up your lover's reunion, but Kor's in trouble. Amon captured her.
No. No, she can't be gone.
Come on. We have an avatar to rescue. Your fly was down.
Thanks for catching that.
Welcome once again to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. As always, I'm your host, Derek Reining. It's a little awkward, but his fly is down. It's Sam Standish.
I didn't know I would be caught undressed. I tender my resignation from the Bitter Jurors podcast. I don't think I can continue now that I've been nude on a Zoom call.
I mean, worse things have happened on here, I'm sure. But we're also joined this week by someone who may also be a nervous peer. It's Alex Conti.
Hello, remember me?
She's back.
I'm back, baby. You thought you got rid
of her. What erp?
What erp? Nothing. I just worked today and then I watched Legend of Korra, which I haven't done in a while. Like, I think the last time I watched it, I was like still living with my parents, so.
Oh. Amanda,
maybe that timeline doesn't make sense.
On,
yeah.
No, yeah, that makes sense.
Speaking of convoluted timelines.
Especially, it was weird.
Oh, sorry. Sam.
Oh, am I here? I'm here. I'm here.
You're here, yes.
Whew, that was a close one.
It was. Woo! I
almost went missing like Korra or like Derek did last week.
Yeah. We're taking turns as being kidnapped by mysterious men in masks. And that's our thing now. That's
it's
our
more of a one-on-one interview show now.
Mm-hmm. But Conti, thoughts on this, feelings on this episode in general before we really start getting really granular with it?
And I've said this before, I rarely go back and watch the first season of a TV show because it just never stacks up to season two. Like, season two is always better. Maybe the only exception is Glee, but I do love season two of Glee more than season one. But anyway, so I guess my thoughts are...
So it's not the exception.
It's definitely not. So I guess my thoughts are... I have been right to not go back and watch season one. I didn't hate the episode, but I was like, season four is just way better, but save that for later.
Conta, had you seen Legend of Korra before it came on Netflix in the summer last year?
Yeah, and I should look up when it came out, but I like distinctly remember watching it in college and being like, I feel like I'm too old to be watching Legend of Korra in my, like, apartment on my computer, but I am doing that. So I definitely watched it then. And I assumed I watched all of it. I wasn't very surprised when I went back and watched it when it was on Netflix.
You were like, yeah, remember this.
Like, got it.
When this happened, I can just skip to the next episode.
No twists or turns. This is a very twisty, turny episode, I guess. They certainly tell us a lot of things in this episode.
I don't know if you'll be shocked to hear this, but I did not care for this episode.
Yeah.
I liked it to a point. I liked it up until a moment, and then I was sort of like, I don't care about this.
Oh, interesting.
It's just like they introduce Yakon as a man who I've never heard of. Nobody's ever introduced me to this person before. Never heard of this character once prior to this episode. Then they're like, oh my god, he's a bloodbender. And I'm like, I didn't think he wasn't. I didn't know anything about him until I found out he was a bloodbender. So this is not shocking to me. And they're asking me to care about something they've never even told me about before.
Yeah, this whole episode is not good. those were my thoughts. Like, I feel like all my notes were literally, I was just like writing down plot points just so I could remember the events, and none of it was like, this is cool, this is fun. It's just like, this happened, period. Yeah, which is, I guess that's how it feels. They dole out information in this episode, is just like, they present it to us very plainly.
Yeah, I also feel like over the last 24 hours, they've been releasing information about what the Avatar tabletop role-playing game is going to be like. And I read through that, and I read comment sections discussing it. And in the game, like, there are not like defined mechanics for bending and like super specific like numbers on how to like you use your attacks, because it's about like the story and like the plot and like the characters interacting with each other, which I think is more true to how Avatar is. But then I turned on this episode of Legend of Korra, and it truly is just a storyline about bending with no like character building aspects to it. So this is an interesting one too.
Yeah, they show us adult Avatar people, and it's like, I don't think they'd be acting like this. Sorry, I don't think Sokka would be like acting the way that he's acting at trial or whatever. I don't know. That's just me, where I was just like, this feels like, I feel like I'm reading bad fanfic when I see this.
Yeah, it's like he's like very humorless, and why is he like the judge? It was like, why is that Sokka's role in the world, is to be judge and maybe mayor? I don't know.
Yeah, I also don't like, I feel like the older kid designs other than Toph are like not good. Like Aang is just like, I just don't think he would fill out that much. Like, I feel like he would be like a thinner adult.
Yeah, and some really obscene facial hair coming from the guys. It's upsetting. why the chin strap? I don't get it.
The chin strap, and then, okay, so this series is very anime and very scary, the way that they animate a lot of stuff. And, like, I just have it stuck in my head when he's getting bloodbended at the end, and, like, the face he makes and his chin strap beard, and I'm just like, that's disgusting to me.
There's also a really gross close-up on Yakone's face when he's, like, up, and, like, it's weird from the side angle on his face, which, you know, I think is interesting, but is another gross part of the episode.
Yeah, lots of icky noises when people are being bloodbent, squelching, slurping, all the bad stuff.
The word squelch just really makes you feel terrible to hear.
Yeah, that's, I think, my biggest issue with this episode is the bloodbending, in the sense that now people can just, like, bloodbend an entire room of people with absolute ease and don't even have to, like, move a muscle at all. It's very, like, against everything Avatar was about, which is all about, like, the physicality of bending and, like, I don't know, the stuff that, like, was, like, really powerful, like, came with a cost, or you had to be, like, really, really disciplined. But here it just seems like you have to be related to some guy to be the most powerful person on the planet.
I also never really, like, thought about, like, I just, like, I forgot that it was only during the full moon, and I don't know. I just like with everything that I'm going to complain about in Legend of Korra, it's just like, why wasn't this storyline set up at all? Like, why is this first time I'm ever hearing about any of this stuff going on? Like, why were they not like putting little seeds of information so that when we got to these twists and turns, I was like expecting something else, but then I was like, oh wait, but that actually does make sense, because we were misinterpreting what we thought we knew. And like, it just to introduce the stuff is just not the way. But you know, that's fine. I guess they decided they decided that was fine. So I guess it is.
That makes sense to me. You know what? Now that I think about it, it's good, because they decided to do it, and that's what makes it good. But yeah, so I guess to like run down the episode, we start with Korra being bloodbent again. Gross ass noises going on here. Down some stairs, pretty, like, that's a really terrifying image of her, like, just, like, floating, like, a horrible look on her face. My only question is, how did we get here? Like, was Tarlok, like, one hand on the wheel, the one hand, like, kind of sort of, like, pushed back. Like, I don't know how he managed to get her all the way here. And lucky him for having, like, a box of pure platinum down in his basement.
When I was watching this episode, like, there is nothing more Avatar to me than, like, a gigantic box of metal. Like, they use it to, they have used them to imprison three people I'm thinking of off the top of my head now, and I'm sure I could come up with more if I needed to.
Yeah, that's true. It's very, it's like a trope at this point within the show to be inside a metal box. Sadly, not as cool as when Toph was in one.
Or Boomy, honestly. Boomy had the face hole that he could come and see out of. I just felt like Korra could have got through this box somehow. Well,
the ceiling's basically open. Like, it has bars, but it's like...
That's what I was thinking.
She could have, just stuck a hand out and bended something in the room. I don't know.
Or, like, since it is open up at the top, like, I just felt like blasting fire through it isn't that dangerous because the fire's not, like, the heat is hitting the metal, but it's, like, she's all the way down on the bottom of it. I don't know. It just felt like there was something she could have done.
Yeah. But instead, she chooses to meditate, you know. It works out for her, I guess. Like we said... their version of, like, giving hints about this whole storyline is just, like, showing those little flashbacks throughout the season. Which, again, like, didn't really, like, set up anything other than, like, we knew something happened at some point.
To someone
we may know. And so she meditates. And, I mean, this is kind of, like, a big deal for Korra that she's able to even, like, connect this much spiritually. Because we know she is, like, not her tea at all. So I mean, that's exciting, at least, that she managed to do that. Good for her.
It is, but it comes at a point of zero progress for her character. She just suddenly is able to do so, and I'm just like, okay, like, work, but, like, where did this come from? Like, what barrier did you get through? Like, I struggled with this your entire life, and suddenly she's, like, receiving a spiritual vision, and I'm like, why?
Maybe the blood bending, like, unlocked something in her brain. Or, like, put blood in, like, the right side or left side, but that was the creative side of her brain. And, like, now it's actually working. Or, like, Lucy, or, like, Limitless, like, she's finally using, like, 100% of her brain.
Yeah, next episode we're gonna see her typing on two laptops at once.
I want that pill. I did like the scenes of all the different people waking up. Like, the Milo answering the phone was cute, and, like, seeing Lynn's barren apartment was, you know, interesting too. Glad to see that the metal bending cops let her keep the armor for whatever reason. They didn't need to take that away from her.
Yeah, she gets to keep the armor and also can just release people from prison. They really don't. we had to have a two-parter last time we wanted to break people out of prison if we're thinking about Avatar, and Lynn handles that in like 10 seconds.
This episode was all about prison breaking. They broke Bolin and Mako and Asami out. They broke the useless metal bending cops who kind of had cool outfits though still out of the prison, and then Korra also broke out of prison. And we broke out of the prison of not knowing what happened in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they were going for.
They might just feel like we were in jail. That's what that's the emotion they wanted to evoke in this episode. But yeah, Lynn gets to do cool stuff. You know, we get to see her do her little wavy thingy, which is cute.
When she
stops the ground, the waves come out.
Oh, the wave!
Like, I was her echolocation. Like,
her waving, yeah. When she waves,
I was thinking like this.
she's like doing the word.
The earth, like a wave. This does. Yeah. Lynn does have my award for coolest bending part of the episode. I loved when they were on the tram and she like bent it so they like flew up into the sky, and then she also bent a hole through the ceiling so they like escaped.
Yeah.
That was iconic. Absolutely.
A bit of a sleigh.
It made me say, go off, ma'am.
Go off. That's a good one. I feel like I'm glad that the Team Avatar gets a little redemption here, given like last time they faced off with Cheatwalkers, they like just got the absolute shit kicked out of them. And so good for Bolin and Mako like getting a few licks in this time. I'd say the coolest for me was when Bolin like brought the tunnel down on them. That was cute. Good for my boy.
I think my favorite bending moment was when Lin metal bended Bolin's zipper up and caught like maybe a little bit of it in there.
Yeah, like why was part chunk of his dick still out of the pants or something? I don't know, it's like a confusing reaction from Bolin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a little confused, a little aroused. It was a lot of emotions going on there.
Then they go, they find a secret tunnel in a bridge, under a bridge somewhere.
How fucking convenient that when they were walking through the tunnel that the people on the motorcycle came at that exact moment. Okay. And like went through the wall.
That there were so many convenient parts of that. They find the bridge where these tracks are happening. They see the like through the like fake part of the wall. And then when they get to the next part of it, somebody this made me laugh so hard, it's so stupid. Someone was like, the person who was there says to no one, that tram goes to the training camp. And then somebody came back into that room from a different way and said, everything was delivered to the prison, sir. It's like, and then we get a shot of Denzin being like, okay, we have to go down that one. It's like, this didn't have to be, like, this didn't have to be a scene at all. Like, why was this written?
Yeah, the dialogue is very goofy. First of all, yeah, Mako just, like, really remembers pinpoint location where Bolin was captured at some point, and then they get there, and he's like, there's got to be a tunnel around here, and then Lin does her wavy thing, and then she's like, there's a tunnel over there. Like, it's just so, like...
How are there so many secret tunnels in this city? Like, the cops should know how to, like, suss out suspicious tunnels. Why are there so many tunnels?
I mean, I love a city with tunnels. Without them, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles wouldn't exist, so true. I can't say anything about this.
Did you see that there is going to be a fighting game where Aang and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles can fight?
Oh.
No. What game is that?
I just started seeing art for it. Like, Nickelodeon is doing a Super Smash Bros. Game.
Oh my god. Okay. Who's my main going to be?
Well,
Raphael.
Helga from Hey Arnold is a confirmed fighter already, so I'm feeling that. That's going to be like the Princess Peach of the game, I can just tell, for all absolutely the gays.
It's just going to be kids kicking the shit out of each other. And I respect that.
Yeah, can I please be Tommy Pickles, the infant? Just, like, get punted across this like map by a grown adult.
By Patrick Starr.
Grown adult Patrick Starr.
Yeah, so like I said, I feel like the theme of this episode is like people like we the audience are being given a lot of information, and also they decided that this should be the episode where Asami learns that Korra and Mako kissed.
They're stopping in the middle of the tunnel, and like Bolin is like, they kissed once during the tournament, and that was during their relationship. That was like during Mako and Asami's relationship, and they don't even talk about that in this episode.
I forgot about that. Wish I would have known. Wish they would have reminded me.
Yeah,
would have been the dramatic moment of the episode at all. But instead, nothing comes from that in this 22-minute episode.
It's like Osami's like, what? She's like, she seems understandably upset, and Bolin is like not reacting. He's like, yeah, duh. Like, sorry, I thought I told you. And like, they just keep moving on. And I think it's like supposed to play into, I don't know, Korra and Mako having weird like romantic tension in this episode for no reason, also.
I hate it. Like, I can't, I don't know. Something's not sitting right about Korra like simping for Mako. I don't see it.
Mm-mm. And also, the least charismatic relationship, Mako and Asami had a kiss, and I didn't even remember they were supposed to be together.
Yeah. Mako, I think, just has such awful chemistry with everyone that it's like he just like brings down other characters who should be more charismatic, but just like his horrible blobbiness just like infects everyone around him and turns them into colorless blobs. It's a shame.
People hate on colorless blobs, but they did give us a great episode of Fairly Odd Parents.
That's what I was going for. So yeah, they managed to, let's see, they find out that Kor is not with the Equalists, because it turns out this whole time Tarlok was telling people that it was the Equalists doing this. A whole lot of subterfuge going on here.
You know, I forgot that a whole part of this episode was them going down the wrong trail. Like, truly, for no reason, they were in the wrong place.
And then out of nowhere, Tenzin's just like, literally, a Mon-Hazar. It's like, where did, okay.
He's not here. The only reason that Tarlok would have lied about that is because he has her.
Yeah, he's like, there's... yeah, Tenzin just like is like waiting for an excuse to think Tarlok is evil, so maybe this is all he needs, just to assume that. As if they didn't also just like spend, like we said, half their day assuming something and being completely wrong about it. They're like, let's just follow another, let's just keep jumping to conclusions till we get to the right one.
I did love seeing the flashbacks of Tarlok setting the scene for his, you know, discovery of being attacked. But then I was sort of like, he's got the glove on. Did he shock himself and then somehow wake up and then take the glove off and then pretend to be unconscious afterward?
I guess. Yeah. He definitely pulled the community, whatever the cloth, whatever that's called, chloroform move. Everyone waking up at once, like, whoa, what happened?
And I'll be H, he did not need to throw that thing around the pillar. That was not needed.
Just to set the scene, you know? Just to establish these Equalists have awful aim, or they were playing what we call redneck golf here in the Midwest.
Mm, we say hillbilly golf, so kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is what?
When you throw it's like... Yeah.
The stick game? Or like the pole and... You know what?
It's like there's two balls attached by a string.
Yeah.
And you like lob it at a structure that is made out of like piping that is like three tiers.
Yes. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for this non-binary they them coming in clutch and telling the cops the truth.
Oh my god, they were iconic.
Unclear why they waited until now to come forward with their information. I think there was a lot of stuff that happened in this episode for the drama. Like, I felt like there were probably better ways for Yakone to, you know, evade capture, like secretly, or like getting out of the way, or like if he was taken to prison, eventually he could like bloodbend his way out. He didn't need to do it in front of legions of people while he's trying to prove that he can't bloodbend. But for the sake of drama in the middle of a courtroom, I get it. And then this person who I still don't know the name of, who has been in like four episodes, comes forward at the moment of the height of drama, when like if you saw the Avatar getting taken away, do something with that. Like, it's a full 16 hours from then. Like, I would honestly consider them obstructing justice.
I just love that they just like instantly turn on Tarlok after all this. Good for them, honestly. I don't know who they are. Don't know what their motives are, but I assume they just live for drama, and that's why they chose to wait this extended period for just the right moment.
This episode, I think, was a backdoor pilot to a legal spinoff in the Avatar universe, and I think it's good. Like, I think that show would be good.
In this... Oh, yeah, go ahead, Conte.
I don't have anything to say.
Nothing, no thoughts on
no response to that.
No, well,
written by Aaron Sorkin, I guess.
I guess.
They had two lawyers argue, battling it out in a courtroom. I think it was good.
Yeah, they were arguing, I guess, to the council people who are the jury as well as the judge.
That's how it seemed to me.
Yeah, I don't. This justice system seems a little confused.
That's new. It's new.
It is. Yeah, this is like maybe their second case they've handled, and they're already getting bloodbent. Just a whole mess in that courtroom there.
Yeah, because this was probably like 30 years after Avatar happened. So, like, it's really not that much time to set up a whole system.
Yeah. So, that, yeah, we can forgive them, I guess, for their the awful facial hair and the bad justice system.
Well, we didn't say anything about that. But not the facial hair.
Right.
I did like Yakone's getaway bird horse. That thing was cool. It was cool that he had his wheels right outside to sprint away on.
Absolutely. His chocobo was
indeed
ready and willing. Yeah, but that's another weird detail of this episode, is Naga is like missing for most of it, and then she just like shows up to save
yeah,
her.
They said Naga's missing, and I thought that that would mean that the Equalist had her too, but then she showed up.
She just went to the snow where she belongs, which is like, that makes sense.
Yeah, she just was in the area and was like, oh, there she is.
And the fact that like they didn't follow the Avatar when she escaped into like the forest is like, you would have caught her if you would have just followed her for 2 seconds, because she immediately crashed and like was knocked unconscious.
Amon was probably like, oh, she's gonna die. Okay, that's fine.
Perfect. Just let her die of hypothermia down there. Yeah, I did like, though, that we got like a little snowboarding scene from Korra, because I do know that was like a big sort of like thing about her visual design, that they liked snowboarders. So that's cute that they did that, you know.
And she didn't see that twig coming up.
She did not. Poor thing. That's our girl, though. So we get they find Korra. And then we get a really awkward, horrible scene of Mako, like, carrying her, like, pushing, like, Asami out of the way. Like, please, excuse me, I personally need to carry her these, like, these 2 yards over to the air bison.
And then touch her face. It's like, chill out, dude.
And she's super into it, too. It's, I don't like that scene at all. It's very upsetting.
Yes.
To me, I'm confused about how the Equalists found the secret hideout. How did Amon get there?
But he was right. Well, I mean, I think we know later, maybe a little hint later on the season, maybe why he knows, but like at the time.
What's the deal?
What's
and tea? how does he know that he has the Avatar? How does Amon know that the other guy has the Avatar?
In the same way Tenzin did.
He just was like, I bet.
Yeah, you know, good thing everyone in the show is very intuitive. They're just tapped in, you know.
And they're always right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part. Well, any other, I guess, thoughts on this amazing, well, we can all agree, 10 out of 10 masterpiece episode, right? Best so far.
You know, some people may think that. Some people may agree.
Some people like season one. Some people like season one of Korra.
People are out there do enjoy it.
And it's because they haven't seen seasons 2, 3, or 4.
Or at least 3 or 4, or at least 4.
Yeah.
At least 4. I mean, yeah.
To hear Kantai tell it. My other thoughts on this episode, there was a bit more convenient dialogue in this scene with the Equalist. Amon is like, make sure you electrocute the box before you open it, otherwise blah blah blah, and it's like
at full volume, dude.
Yeah
Korra was like,
so far away that that's why they had to have the box open, so that Korra would be able to hear it. That line of dialogue,
messy. Everyone in this episode is so messy, I can't take it.
And then to talk about messy, this episode also used the phrase underbelly, which I hate.
Wait, why? Talk us through this.
They talked about Yakone, it's trying to command the, like, I forget what phrase they said, but like they said like raunchy underbelly or something like that. And just I feel like it wasn't raunchy, but they like just like the phrase underbelly just makes me think of some gross imagery that I will not define on the pod. But I feel like it usually comes tacked on with seedy. And I feel like seedy underbelly is particularly terrible, but in my mind, they're unable to be taken apart from one another. So if I hear the phrase underbelly, just the gross stuff comes to mind.
That's fair. I get that. Kind of like squelch. We've lots of awful words in this.
Exactly episode. Like squelch.
Squelch.
How do you guys feel about Cora running her little ass away when Amon was there?
I was like, when she threw the icicles, I was like, bitch, run. Like, get out of there. You're not, you've been in a cage and you've been bloodbended. Like, you do not have it in you right now to fight this beach.
No, not at all. Yeah. Bless her heart. She tries her best, you know. She's always going to be a fighter. Not a snowboarder, though.
Not very. She may look like one. Mm-hmm. But she ain't one.
No.
Social media versus IRL.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So are those all our spoiler-free thoughts, feelings, and concerns on Out of the Past?
Ugh, the terrible name. I didn't even know what it was called. That's awful.
Again, just horrible, horrible words chosen for this episode. I'm ready to spoil.
To have the reveal not even be that Tarlok is this old guy, like someone who is from the past, like it's his dad. It's like, and it's like Cora doesn't, there's no part of the vision that even says that. It's like all of the, there's just too much wrong with this episode. And I don't appreciate it. I know, you know, up until this point, I feel like there's only really been one or two episodes that I haven't enjoyed so far of the season. I felt like I was coming around on it, like, earlier on in the season. I was like, oh, like, it's actually not as bad as I remember. And then you sort of watch this episode, and I sort of feel like a couple more episodes coming up will make me feel this way. And you're like, oh, no, yeah, I remembered correctly. It's, like, well written.
Yeah. You you know, that's what this episode was all about. Meeting your expectations.
From the past.
Yes. okay, well, Kantai, do you want to tell the people where to find you before we start spoiling stuff?
Yeah, I am on Twitter and Instagram, at Kantai Kantai. They are deleted off my phone right now, but I'll probably be back soon.
Oh.
So please tag me and please follow me.
Don't unfollow her.
Do not unfollow me. I'll be back.
Watch this space.
Yes. She'll be out of the past and into the present.
With her tweets. I'm at Sam Standish on Instagram and Twitter. Follow my other podcast, That Word on the Straits, on Instagram and Twitter, STR8S, obviously. By the time you're hearing this, Derek and I will have met in person, which is, you know, not something I need to plug, but I'm excited about it. And I was thinking about what I should mention about my life. And, you know, that's a pretty major one.
Very major. I'm so excited. BJ Boys, live and in person. It's happening, folks.
Out of the past, into Chicago.
Yes. well, you can find me at Rain Dierks on Twitter. And you can find me on my other podcast with Christine Palin, where we talk about Revolutionary Girl Lucina. That most recent episode of that was way more fun than this one to talk about. Went for like an hour and a half.
Shocking.
Mm-hmm. So go listen to, if you want to hear people be happy and excited about the thing they're talking about, go over there. We loved our last episode. You can find us at Shadowplay Gaze on Twitter. Yes.
I did remember that between the last recording and this one, Survivor announced that they are coming back September 22nd. So we'll be back with our original concept of the pod.
Yeah.
So soon.
Literally over a year later. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah. a year and like 4 months. So like a year and a third. Later.
Out of the past, baby.
maybe that is what they were going for. Maybe the episode title is actually good.
I think so. I think that is what they were trying to accomplish there. Well, I guess we can start talking about spoilers now. I feel like the only thing really to spoil is the fact that we learned that the reason Amon is immune to bloodbending is because he can bloodbend.
But like, I guess Aang can't. I guess it was Katara that could.
Correct. Yeah,
but she can be bloodbended, but she was also just a kid. I don't know. I guess he's counteracting it.
Why do people even know what bloodbending is? Like, Hama invented it in a prison, and then she died before before it was able to spread it to anybody except Katara.
I guess Katara was teaching people on the low.
Literally, like that's the only way this could have happened.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, yeah, it's illegal according to them at this point. Like, so Katara told someone, but did not tell them enough. Like, did not teach people how to like even just like break out of it. I feel like you could at least teach people that.
Yeah, they also said it's been illegal for decades, so maybe there was like 5 or 10 years where Katara like didn't think it should be illegal. They weren't like, it's been illegal since it was invented. They were like, it's been illegal for a little bit now, so you shouldn't do it anymore.
And what, yeah, like in what way would that ever be okay to do?
Well, I can like, think of a few ways.
I mean, erectile dysfunction, maybe. Mm. Is that what you're looking for?
Sure, why not?
You just cut that.
We will not.
Please just cut that. I don't know.
Me talking about episode 109 of Korra.
We can just cut that note. Yeah, I'm not excited for this. Is not the last info dump episode, obviously, because next we're going to learn all about Amon.
Which after no setup throughout the entire season so far, like Amon has like not even been in the season
at all. But he's terrifying. He's the solution, whatever that means. Yeah. So that's not going to be fun either, learning about all that.
It's not. Like, it's not. It's because, I like, the parallel in Avatar The Last Airbender is the episode where we learn about Roku and Sozin's past, or Azula. Whichever one, it's fine. Sozin, I was right the first time. And it's like, yes. But these are two characters who have been present in the show, or like we have come to make like assumptions about them due to everything that's happened so far leading up. So like a one-off episode about their backstories that is also giving development to Aang and Zuko is like not at all comparable to this episode and the following episode, where we learn information about characters we don't care about that brings nothing to the forefront for any of the lead characters.
Yeah, it's just not well done. I believe that one will be coming like after this. First we got to deal with the fucking like Asami, they're the Mako Korra kiss fallout for like a whole episode. Same as like
you look so excited.
It. Yes.
I'm thriving. I feel good.
Yes. But you know, just I don't like that they brought blood bending into this. I don't think it was a good story making or storytelling decision at all. And I never will like it. You cannot convince me this was a good idea ever.
No, like, it could have been good if they had completely reworked the entire story. I guess what we've been saying the entire time. Right. Yeah, I like it. No, this was bad, and the rest of the season is bad. So that's, you know, fun for the viewers at home.
Yeah, and I don't think season 2 is good either, from what
ding,
I remember.
Ding, ding, bitch. Ding, ding, ding.
They do introduce Varric, and I love Varric. Like, sure. I want to be the 1% too. Like that, I respect this man. but I don't think. But I'm just like distinctly remembering like the Nucktuck stuff, and like that's not good.
Why is it so much? Why is that in it so much?
I don't want to learn about propaganda. I've never once learned about propaganda and been like, I'm so glad that I learned about this. It's just not interesting.
Yeah. We don't have to be dreading that quite yet. But we will. Yeah, let's just sit.
I think that after a good season of Survivor, I'll be ready to talk about a bad season of Legends of Korra.
You're being so optimistic about Survivor. I'm excited.
I am looking forward to it. I'm excited, and it's like, you know, Jeff is too, so I'm ready to go.
The hair is voluptuous.
If they cut hair, I'm going to be so angry. We need a full season of long hair, Jeff. We need it.
We do.
He was wearing this cowboy hat in the episode that I watched from season 4, and I was like, I love this. And then he gets in an airplane or a helicopter, and then when he gets out, he has a haircut, and I was like,
Wait a minute.
That's what I'm worried about. Like, they released promo images of Jeff with long hair a couple months ago, and then he did a video a couple of days ago, and like there's another promo image with him with the long hair. So like they're kind of sticking to the story of Jeff having long hair, and I really, really want them to maintain it for at least a season. Like I need at least a season of long hair Jeff. Is that too much to ask?
Not at all. It's very
and normally
Zuko.
I don't care that much about Jeff Zuko. I almost said Jeff Zuko. Jeff Pro. I normally wouldn't care this much about him, but I love the aesthetic choice.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's all, you know, while we're going through this rough patch of Korra, look into the future. A woman is going to win Survivor again. Why did I just set myself up for devastation?
Has a woman not won in a while?
Six seasons.
What the fuck?
Six men have won. That's we are dry. We are craving.
We're rabid. We're feral.
The season that I watched, I watched the last two episodes of season four, and there was an all female final three.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The golden days, the halcyon days of Survivor.
They just don't make them like that anymore.
Great.
They do
good.
Not.
Good.
Great. Well, cool. Thank you, Conte, so much for coming on, razzing the fuck out of this episode with us.
I felt the energy going into it, and I was like, I can do that. I can fuck with this show for a little bit.
Push it around a little. Throw it in the locker.
There's not a lot of Bolin in it, and Varric hasn't been introduced yet, and the villain from season four doesn't exist, so I'm just like...
Yeah.
What's there for me?
Next.
I get that. Well, thank you for joining us despite all three of your faves not being featured.
Well, thank you for having me. I loved being here.
Oh.
So
I always love being here with the boys.
Aww.
The BJ boys.
The BJ boys. Mm-hmm. Well, remind the people where they can find you and sometime in the foreseeable future, maybe.
The account still exists at Kante Kranti.
Okay,
you can go look at old stuff.
Very funny old stuff out of the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can find me at Rain Derricks on Twitter. You can find ShadowPlayGaze at ShadowPlayGaze on Twitter. Christy Palin, Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant, all that stuff. Go listen.
I'm at Sam Standish on Instagram and Twitter. Follow my pods, Word on the Straits, Aperture's Pod. If you love this episode any more than you love this episode of Legend of Korra, doubtful I know, but you can please feel free to deliver us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We love it and cherish it forever. So, those are sort of my action items. Hope you have fun out there. If you're at O'Hare Airport today, the day this episode comes out, I will be there. And, maybe you can see me there.
Is that when you're flying back?
Mm-hmm.
Sad, but must be.
The trip, it feels like the trip has barely even started and I'm already going home.
Man, out of the future. I don't know.
No, that was it. Yeah.
That was the one. That was the
cut
take.
Cut that. I don't know.
Well, thank you again for joining us, and thank you all for listening. Bye.